Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need.
Why did the YMCA give me the YMCA Peace Medal for diversity and inclusion and then take it away about 7-8 days later? After assuring me that they would be working with me because I made them aware that the Zionist lobby would not stop. They would not stop. How it started, how this constant attack on me, that I have become a target, because it falls on the shoulder of the NDP.
That was Rana Zaman. And in a moment, we are going to get an answer to that question and find out just how the NDP laid the groundwork for what she's going through right now. If you're a longtime listener, this story will probably not surprise you. It's another grassroots activist targeted for their Palestinian solidarity work, another faux progressive institution bending to the will of Zionists, another candidate thrown under the bus. And although this is as personal as it gets, you'll hear in Rana's voice just how deep this cuts. It would be a huge mistake to dismiss her story and others like it as mere examples of individual grievances with the party. In part because the consequences of this kind of behavior that you're going to hear about, pure cowardice, are felt way beyond the betrayed. They're helping to reshape the political landscape for the worse. Every time the NDP or an organization like the YMCA, even unions, fail to defend their members from these attacks, they provide fuel to our enemies. They validate those smear campaigns and help isolate the very activists they pretend to celebrate. And they do it in the name of strategy. A losing strategy, one rife with capitulations that has pushed the Overton window to the right and broken the trust of membership. But a strategy they keep deploying nonetheless. But hey, if this is all very shocking to you, there's a playlist linked in the show notes you need to check out called Inside the NDP. Let's get to Rana's story, shall we? Welcome. Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, Jessa. First of all, thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share my story. As you know, mainstream media will never share it in its entirety or from the perspective and viewpoint as a pro-Palestinian activist. And saying that, you want me to introduce myself. Whenever I meet people, they say, what do you do? I say, oh, I'm just a community volunteer. And that's what I see myself as. Because that's what I do. I volunteer in the community in many different ways and with a lot of diverse organizations.
You were recently recognized for that work. The YMCA honored you with their Peace Medal. They've since rescinded it. But the story is a lot deeper than that. So let's hear it from your perspective.
I got the award October 3rd. They emailed me, had a phone call, and I was shocked. I was shocked because, again, the past context, I have been pretty much boycotted from media. I told the why. I'm really shocked. Are you sure you're giving it to me? And at that time, they assured me, yes, you were nominated by community. The committee is a community committee, and they saw your work, and they awarded you that. So you are being this award from the community.
And what was it for? What did they cite as the reason you were, publicly cite the reason you were getting the award?
Last year, someone from another community, a newcomer, had nominated me because of the work I did with them, and I supported and helped. And then they and I empowered, uplifted, and they saw the work I was doing. And they got to know me, and they saw firsthand everything I was doing in the community that no one was aware of. So based on that, they nominated me. I met with the Y staff and the Y leadership, because when you're a nominee, the nominator and nominee get to meet at a meet and greet, like a tea party, to celebrate. And I got to meet them, and I said, you know what? This is such an amazing thing, because this is my first recognition or award, or even recognition, acknowledgement of my existence and my work since I've been cursed since 2019. And I feel like the evil eye has been lifted thanks to, you know, my friend here who nominated me, and of course for you to recognize and then accept it. And they were like, no, we're amazed at, you know, what you're doing and everything. And we're so sorry. You are definitely deserving, along with, you know, everyone else here. But it was a really super hard decision. But we're so glad you could join us, and you're one. So they got to know me. But this lovely lady, she's Palestinian, she nominated me and shared everything she knew about me. And when the Y received it, they're like, when they said, yeah, Rana, this is the second time in a row you've been nominated. Now it's clearly obvious that you are working with diverse communities. Then they announced it on their page, on their YMCA page, and they had three pictures, which one of them was mine under the diversity and inclusion peace medal. And then they had the other two recipients. And after that, they were doing individual stories of each person. I hesitated. Because at that point, as soon as they put it out there, B'nai B'rith started campaigning against me and put my picture out there on all their social media accounts. And the Atlantic Jewish Council, you know, got involved. They actually got involved and probably informed them, oh, look what's happening to this local person. And then apparently other organizations, I think someone mentioned CJA as well. When I spoke to the Y, they did give me specific names that we've received, you know, communication from these organizations, and they're concerned about giving you the award. So I said, okay. And so I waited, because I thought, well, they've done the campaign, they're going to rescind it. So I'm not putting anything out there, right? And I myself did not post that I received it until down the road, and I was given assurances that, no, you are receiving it, despite the pushback we're getting, and we're handling it right now. And then apparently it did escalate to a much greater level where national board got involved. The local Y, I have to give credit to them. They stood their ground. The staff, the committee, the board, after speaking with me, addressing the concerns of B'nai B'rith, CJA, or AJC, because he's saying these are their concerns. And I'm like, everything that you've heard, either they're lies or they've taken it out of context. That little picture of that tweet or of that little excerpt they gave is completely out of context, out of the whole thing.
We know the how they work. We, a million times over, it's a playbook that they've used against you. And it makes me so angry that you were never really able to enjoy getting that award, you know, because you knew really what was going to come down the line, because you'd already experienced. I mean, we had intended to tease the audience with it a bit, but you're right. Like, there is no telling this story without your previous experience with these same types of lobbyists and these same types of tactics, with unfortunately kind of similar results.
So I actually spoke to Brian in person two nights before the award. Before then, I was dealing with other staff, and they were giving me assurances and everything. And I think when National got a push, that's when they reached out to the CEO. And then it was, I believe, left to him to speak with me and to see how best to move forward. And I had two sleepless nights, because Brian called me, you know, one day, and we had a conversation. And he said, after speaking with you, Rana, and then your personality, everything that's coming through, I see you as the way you've been written about through the nominations. It is who you are, and that is seems like the person who is deserving of this award. He said, when the information I've been getting from other side, plus when I go and see the post, you know, some of them are quite harsh. And I'm like, in what way? I said, as a mother, you know, basically I'm going to say to you, to you guys, as a mother of three, as a person with a soul, or even an iota of humanity, it's going to shock. And when the shock wears off, it's going to turn into anger and rage because we feel helpless. As human beings watching small children being blown to bits and then literally starved in front of our eyes, innocent women, pregnant women being shot, killed, like children are snipered. And men running just to get food for their families and being shot, saying, yeah, you can come and get food here, and then use this target practice. The rage is there. So my post seemed harsh, not vulgar. I didn't use disrespectful language. And I said to him, I said, what have you seen? Is any of it inaccurate? Are they untruths? I have shared it from sources that are on the ground, journalists, other organizations. And then, yes, I used my wording. My wording isn't going to be love, la, 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 love, love, sweetness. It's going to call out the harm, the atrocities being committed in language that people can understand. And also the decades-long propaganda of Palestinians are the problems. Palestinians are the hate-filled ones. Palestinians are animals, dehumanizing them. And then are, you know, their favorite, Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. Hamas didn't come into existence until the 80s, but apparently Hamas has been the problem since 1948, right? Everything is Hamas. So when I saw especially the pictures of the hostages that were released, the Israeli hostages that were released by Hamas, and the Palestinian hostages that were released by Israel, basically I did a comparison and I said, Hamas didn't rape, torture, abuse, violate their hostages. They came out smiling, thanking them, hugging them. Whereas the Palestinian hostages, I can't even describe, starved, beaten, raped, abused, eyes gouged out.
Some of them have been there for years.
For years. With no charges, with no charges whatsoever, just in detention.
And they're worried about the language you use to describe this.
They are worried that I, when I said, who are the real terrorists?
Yeah, they don't like that.
So I said, yeah. Are Hamas the real terrorist or who? Tell me again, Hamas are the terrorists. There would be peace and harmony on earth in Palestine and Gaza and flower wreaths everywhere, and happy, healthy, glowing children with no checkpoints, with no apartheid, with no wall creating a barrier if Hamas wasn't there.
I just wanted to kind of bring us back to your specific experience a little bit, and because it is astonishing that like folks worry about language, but as a front-facing organization, some of these institutions are very worried about optics, and it doesn't surprise me that they're, you know, policing your language or like we're foreshadowing a little bit again, but knowing your work, having your social media available to peruse and giving you the award, but then it wasn't so much what you said or did, but the pressure that they feel. The pressure they feel from the lobbyists, it's unrelenting. They're very good at, you know, phone banking and inundating with emails and pressuring folks from high up. And they feel this pressure and they cave quite often. So let's go back to the YMCA who, like, know you're good people, right? They give you an award and now they start to feel this pressure. And this is bringing back a lot of feelings for you today, because like I reached out because of that post that you made on Facebook, you know, today or yesterday, I lose track of time, especially on social media, but it drew that those parallels where you know, you think you're kind of in, you're being accepted, valued, and you have to deal with that kind of disappointment from institutions that you've kind of wandered into.
Absolutely.
Do you want to tell us like what it felt like when you finally realized your kind of your fears have been confirmed, that they weren't in fact going to give you that award, or they were going to take it back?
And that was the worst part, because I had pleaded with them. I really have. I said, listen, do not give me this award and then take it away.
Oh no.
I said that to them.
I am so sorry.
Because I said to them, I've been through this now twice. And it's not about the award or what it represents. It's opening me up to such a degree of violence and attack and abuse publicly and privately. And maybe when I was younger, I had more stamina and I could take it. And I took it twice. I said, I'm much older now. I have major health issues. And I don't have that capacity, neither mental, emotional, and especially physical, to go through that abuse again. I said, so please don't do that to me. And I was assured that as long as when they set their criteria and I did not break what the values of the Y and the Peace Medal represented, I didn't go against those values, and that medal would not be taken away. And I was also assured that we would be working together and taking it one day at a time, because I said, you know, you're setting precedence. I said, you are setting precedence when B'nai B'rith has pushed and you said, no, community is the one who's given her the award, not us, the community. And we are honoring all these diverse communities. We understand your concerns as another part of community, but we cannot overlook all this, you know, configuration of greater community because of one community, smaller community's concerns.
Now, I don't want you to have to, if you feel like you need to defend yourself or explain a tweet, I don't want you to have to do that. It makes me mad, actually, that you feel like you need to, but I understand why you do, because you're inundated. This is what people are reading about you. But I will assure you that the audience listening is absolutely familiar with the smear tactics of the Israeli lobby, of the Zionist lobby. And they know that I have been at that end from the NDP themselves as well. They kicked me out of the party using very similar tactics. I will link that episode so we don't have to go over that again. But the audience, they may have remembered Sean McGilvery coming on the show and telling your story when we talked to him about he's just kind of getting out of the party, giving up on being pragmatic, trying to reform it from the inside. And he often cites your story from 2019 as his awakening moment kind of in the party to see the suppression of pro-Palestinian voices, most specifically, but also just anyone not willing to toe the company line, absolute, right, faces similar treatment. So let's let the audience in on that story as well, as similar as it is to the YMCA, similar to how you told it on Facebook the other day, becoming a candidate and how that, or your quest to become a candidate and how that ended up unfolding. And I want people to also keep in mind the process of vetting and nomination and control and these themes that we are seeing again in the leadership race, right? As Rana tells her story. So In 2019, you thought, I'm going to run for the NDP. I can make a difference somehow. We all have our story. I mean, you could share your reasoning. I did it too, twice. And we all were there, thought we could do good, thought maybe the institution was good. And what happened, Rana?
So I'm not a political person. I hate the word when people, they try to malign me saying, oh, she's a politician.
That's a dirty word.
It is. I'm not a politician. If I was, I would have been far more successful by now. I am a people person. And I also believe in being very transparent and open. Having built that transparency and trust by doing community work, fundraisers, helping out those in need, I came to the attention of the NDP and other parties. They're saying, oh, here's a Muslim woman of color doing great work, and she's being recognized with awards, that she's up and rising in that level, right, publicly. Gary Burrell was the provincial NDP leader, and someone invited me to have a meeting with him. We talked about different things. He's a minister. I had come back from Hajj, and I was on my path of devoting my life in the name of God for the betterment of others and bringing unity and harmony to our community. That was my goal since I did my pilgrimage in Mecca. Okay, so now we're talking 2016, roughly, that I meet Gary Burrell. In that 2 years, I had started being in so many organizations that I just didn't know who to say no to. So I thought my path was I wasn't supposed to say no to anyone and just continue. So at one point, I ended up on 13 different organizations and committees volunteering. But that built the bridges. That set, the groundwork for all of the networking and the bridge building and the great community work that we did together. So I regret nothing of that. And after that meeting, I felt, oh, here's a person whose faith, understands the path and I believe dignity, moral dignity and integrity. And I did lay it out very flatly. This is the kind of person I am. And I'm a team player, but if you ask me to jump, I'm not going to say how high. I'm going to say sure, but why? More or less, this is the conversation we had. If that's some kind of personality you can handle in a person, then definitely I consider it. And he said to me, he goes, Rana, not only will we ask you to join the party, we will actually ask you to run. Believed him, shook hands, joined the party, ran for the nomination. And this is very interesting. Signed up people. My first contested nomination was in Dartmouth North. I was part of that. And I go to that mosque. That was my mosque. And I signed up people from there. Before even that nomination, I started working, volunteering with the NDP, and I met all of these people, and I considered them now family and friends, my new tribe. I was so excited, had never been part of, and I'll be very honest with you, a Canadian tribe. I've always kind of been the oddball out. I say I'm not white enough to fit in the white community and black enough to fit in the black community. When I came here in the 70s and we lived on Brunswick Street and Sogardjan Street was my playground. And frankly speaking, because now as an adult I grew up here, my mentality isn't pure Pakistani either. So I don't fit in the Pakistani community. So I really am the oddball out, it seems like. But in a way, that also makes it good because I also then embrace all communities.
Hence the diversity word.
Hence the diversity part. And so as a result, I love them. They were my new family. They were the people I felt when I never felt I belonged anywhere. I finally belonged somewhere. And I felt I was wanted and appreciated just for being me. I ran for that nomination, and Susan ran for it with zero animosity. When I went to doors, they're like, we're supporting Susan. I said, oh, she's amazing. She's a wonderful person. I said, no matter who wins, it's going to be a win-win for the NDP.
Real team player.
You understand? That is how I handle things. So I lost that nomination. The slight disappointment was there, absolutely. But what was more uplifting to me, to see a room full. And I will never forget this image. And I will say, and please don't mind, I'm using the color words, but this half of the room was all white people. And this half of the room was mostly, it was brown people, diversity. from different backgrounds. It was diversity. And that had not happened before in that area. That level of unity, that togetherness to that level degree had never happened before. And we made it happen together, Susan and I. So when they brought us up on stage, as Susan was walking in front of me, I tried to reach out. I grabbed her hand and I grabbed her hands like, let's walk up together. So then we walked up together, held hands, held each other like sisters. And they made the announcement and her name came up and I gave her a big hug and I was joyous. And I said, this is not a loss. We did not lose anything. I said, look around the room. We have won. We have become a family. I guess it was so moving, and I didn't know this lady personally, Megan Leslie. She reached out to me. And later on, people told me she spoke very highly of me, saying we need to support her and we need to, you know, get her voice out because it's just amazing what she's bringing. And she said to me, it's absolutely touching to hear you speak and amazing. And I just want to give you a hug.
They convinced you to run again. To try again.
Well, the nomination was different. So I ended up running for the provincial election in Clayton Park. And in Clayton Park, as we know, is a dead-end zone. It was like a 40-year hardcore liberal riding. So I knew I was sent to a dead-end riding, where there's no potential of winning. But I still gave it my all. I gave it my all, and I didn't do too badly. People who saw what I was doing, they were so impressed. I was reached out and said, Rana, you should really consider running for the federal party. And you can do it in your own riding because that's a winnable riding because it's 50% NDP chance and 50% liberal. So with that support, encouragement, I ran for the nomination. Now, here's where I felt a huge change. So as you know, the vetting process, the tweeting, I felt during that whole process something was off already. When I would go to the EDA meetings and everything, I didn't feel the warmth, you know, and the embracing that I felt before I was going to now run for this area. Long story short, they vetted me, I got it, started the whole process of signing on people, and then had started doing the meet and greet, putting that out. And I started noticing many things. Sorry, the process is simple. All the leadership is told that they are supposed to be unbiased. They cannot take any candidate's side, right? So they have to be fair.
Sure.
And what I started noticing was, to my meet and greets, none of the hierarchy would be coming. But elected officials were going to the other candidates' meet and greets. Then I also noticed on various NDP pages, including these, you know, elected officials, the other candidates' profile or their link to their pages was shared, including other EDAs and including nationally as well. They were promoting her. Mine was not being promoted anyways. Any articles she did, interviews were being promoted. If I did anything, nothing was being promoted. And then I also got warnings. Rana, there's machinery working against you. And this was decent of them. Because I was still so naive, I didn't catch on to everything until they gave me this warning. When I say the NDP machinery, that is from the EDAs, certain EDAs, to leadership, the elected officials, and God knows from behind the scenes what was going on. And I think once I was warned, that's when I started noticing all these discrepancies. Before, I was in my "we are family" delusional world, and this is a fair and square, you know, contestant.
Democracy.
For democracy. And I just have to do the right thing. I have to sign up people. I have to convince people I am the right person. I have to show them my genuineness and my sincerity and my willingness to work for them. That's what I believed I had to do. And I did it with all my heart. And my question was, but I don't understand. Why would they do that? I like, what's wrong with me?
You internalize it all.
I said, what have I done wrong? I said that. I said, what have I done wrong? And it's like, it's not you, Rana. Sad to say, It's not you. And I'm sorry to say, in other conversations, my color, my background, my diversity was possibly an issue with some of these higher ups, and they felt the other person, who I will say was white, would probably have a better chance of winning, or that's who they felt supporting because it represented in their minds more of what an NDP candidate for MP should look like at that time. This area where I'm living is what I'm speaking. I'm not speaking on behalf of any other areas or provinces, but this is what the feedback I got, and this is obviously then the feeling I started getting, which was only enforced when I tell you how really thrown under the bus, ignored by all of them, left alone to fend for myself in the worst time of my life that was created by them. I said, okay, I'll double down. I'll do the way things are doing and sign up people, convince people. Lo and behold, I won that nomination. I beat them at their own game. I went against their machinery and came out the winner. And that night, you should have seen the room. Whereas the first time I lost, we spoke about family, unity, we're all one, and there was joy and jubilation at the end of it. This was completely different. My side of the room, which was full of diversity, and to my deepest gratitude and appreciation, some very old school, well-known NDP people were also on my side. So I had won the hearts of real NDPers. You know, I'm going to say it, white people. I don't know how else to say
it. Even convince some settlers.
Right? I'm going to say it. And I won. And that other side of the room was silent. Like the shock, the disappointment. And I don't know how to say it, but resentment. I had this wave of resentment coming from there. And the proof was their side didn't get up to congratulate me.
That's awful. Usually you at least put on a bit of a face in politics, right? Like, and that's still your riding and it's still your party. And, you know, the idea is you're still going to help them try to win that seat. That's awful.
And that's how I perceived it, that we were a family and that's how we behave. No. I didn't feel that warmth and acceptance from that side that night. And everybody also noticed it. So much so, my husband, when, we spoke at home, he goes, well, you must be happy you won. And I said to him, I said, you saw that room. They were not happy. And I think it's just a matter of time. They're going to find an excuse to get rid of me. I said that to my husband that evening. And lo and behold, 30 days later, a tweet from 2017, a year and a half ago, that had been vetted and approved, that never got a single like or a retweet or an acknowledgement or anything, now became very problematic because of two words I had used on it. When I retweeted a tweet from Jews Against Genocide, which no one ever brings up, and if I have to say this because people say, well, oh my God, what did she say?
Okay, go ahead.
Basically, and I'm not going by full memory, paraphrasing, at the rate, because it was the 10 steps of genocide, right? So, and I said, well, at the rate they're going, do they plan on killing more than 6 million Palestinians? And to me, that was a recognition and homage to the Holocaust that happened to the Jewish people in remembrance. So I said, I'm sharing that to let them know you've lived this horror.
Yeah, no, I don't want to devolve into trying to defend because that is, again, that's another stupid, that no comparisons are allowed to be made, that the Holocaust is off limits.
They didn't object to that. I said, at the rate that they're going, do they plan on killing more than 6 million Palestinians? Something like, are Israel the Nazis or something like the Israeli? And is Gaza the new Auschwitz? You know, now I say to people down the road, because I'll tell you with the Human Rights Award, because they're constantly picking up things. Even people with a PhD on anti-Semitism don't know when they're going to come up with something else and claim that's anti-Semitism.
And the comparisons are valid. we know that they are fucking quoting Goebbels, and they are using models learned from the Nazis in their treatments of Palestinians. But again, like, yes, they found a tweet that they could definitely had some trigger words that they could use. But what I'm trying to keep driving home, though, is you know it's not your tweet, right? You know it's really not the tweet. Although, yes, from a PR perspective, there are some tweets that I might not leave up as a candidate because they're just going to be a headache down the road. But inherently, there's nothing wrong with those tweets, and you're not attacked for those tweets. They were looking for something, right? Somebody wanted you out of the way, right? Like, not in any kind of conspiracy theory kind of way. You're a problem. You are outspoken. You don't back down. You're pro-Palestinian. You're a Muslim. And this was a problem for people. And so, like, they targeted you. Because I feel like, you know, you'll probably spend your whole life maybe trying to defend this, that, and the other thing when there's nothing wrong with them. Not at all. It's the goodness about you and the, you know, steadfastness that they claim to like about you, which makes you appealing to grassroots activists, which is why, you know, good people that do exist in the party supported you, right? But those are also the reasons why the folks who actually run the party and a lot of white settlers who are actually, you know, more liberal-minded than they are left politically-minded would not like you, right? Would see you as a threat to them maintaining power and their status quo. And I'm sorry, I know I just keep saying that, but I do get a guess a lot coming on telling these very similar stories. And they always feel the need to be like, this was the wording and you must understand, like, this is where we're at in the genocide. And of course I'm upset. And everyone is like, of course. Like, of course, why are people so focused like that? But then that's how they pivot this discussion, right? They're forcing you to then defend this tiny little tweet amidst your body of work, right? And the real issue of the genocide and all the other issues that you work towards, right? Or against. And that's very frustrating.
I was genuinely taken aback that I had disrespected. They asked me to contact, because I said, I don't know how, you know, what I did that, what have I done wrong with these two words? They're like, you need to talk to the Jewish people. And I'm like, I talked to Larry and Judy Haven. I talked to other people of Independent Jewish Voices and other, and they're saying it's not anti-Semitic. They're like, well, you know, the Jewish community is divided. Their words, you know, the Jewish community is divided. Remember that. Because what if we do, they acknowledge the community is divided, but who have they been bowing down to from day one? The pro-Israel lobbyist Zionists who are supporting genocide. Okay, I need to get that out there. So the political parties, everybody knows the Jewish community is divided. They are not unified in their voices. It's interesting how a majority of Holocaust survivors are actually pro-Palestinians. They're pro-Palestine. And I thought, you know what? I don't believe in advocating for one group by causing harm or disrespect to another. So I will be mindful of my words that can cause harm as long as I'm aware, and not use the words Auschwitz or Nazis again. I honored that. I was mindful, I was respectful, and I kept on advocating for Palestine. I kept on posting. And that's why I'm a thorn in their side. So when I got the email, effective immediately, your nomination has been rescinded. Interestingly enough, not my membership. My membership is not rescinded. My nomination is rescinded. I'm welcome to be part of the NDP and continue on.
Pay your dues.
Paying my dues, volunteering, bringing in diversity, representing, being their token diverse person. The next day, they took away my nomination and the shitstorm that followed. And they never warned me, prepared me, or said anything.
Because when they withdrew your nomination, this provided ammunition, validation to the Zionist lobby that you were in fact a bad person that deserved to be, you know, embarrassed in this way, right?
Not just embarrassed, ostracized, humiliated, degraded. I was told there's a special place in hell for people like you. And I looked at it. I didn't kill anyone. I didn't lie. I didn't steal. I didn't cheat. I didn't even yell. But there's a special place in hell for me. But here are these people. The tweet was on the right of return of March, peaceful protest. They shot children. As a mother of three, I spoke up with that tweet because I was incensed with the killing of innocent children at this peaceful protest. But I'm the person there's a special place in hell for? That was just one of many. And then the memes that they came out with, the tweets, the body shaming, everything you could imagine. Call me a effing prostitute because of my hair. Look at her hair. She must be a prostitute. Oh, all kinds of things. You effing terrorist.
All these years later, you remember some of the exact language of that trash. I think some people think, like, we get it so often. People get it so often, especially now, like, pro-Palestinian advocacy is just a magnet for it on social media. But it has fucking impact, right? Like, we can... That was years ago. People will think this happened just because of the way we're talking sounds so familiar to now, right? But we're talking 2019, so that's like 6 years ago.
There's more. And by the way, right now for the why, if you go under C. B'nai B'rith on their, I think, Instagram page, there's lovely, there's like, smear her with pig's blood, that fat sow. She's getting her an award and the why should be ashamed of themselves.
We expect this of Zionists. This doesn't make it okay. And I feel awful that you had to go through that and are going to go through it and are still going through it. But I want to go back to how your comrades, how your family and your community inside the party let you down, for the large part. And I know that you have some exceptions, some notable exceptions. But I went through a similar experience, and that was the greatest pain for me, was seeing how few people were willing to stick their neck out and say something when they saw something so egregious happen to one of their comrades, from the bosses at the NDP and folks in higher up positions, because they were fellow activists. We had been in the trenches. We had gone against bosses before, conservatives, you know, like, we were in battle together many times. And, then when you're targeted like that, it can be very isolating. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So, Jesse, you are a dreamer. You wanted them to come out and say something publicly. My dear, this leadership hierarchy didn't even come out privately and sent me a little boo message. Are you okay? I'm sorry this happened to you. So Gary Burrell, who brought me in, I looked towards him as my mentor. He brought me in. So I would follow his lead. I would ask questions. I would ask for guidance. To me, that was my mentor. People said behind the scenes, oh, that's someone Gary chose. Gary brought her in. Nothing from him. 3 weeks down the road, after I'm going through this shit show, I run into him, and I'll never forget, at the multicultural festival. You know, he's doing his round to show support for diversity. Meanwhile, throwing diversity and ignoring her under the bus and letting her go through hell all by herself. And I also remember Christina was there, Christina Saulnier. It was her and Gary Burrell. I ran into them. I was like, Gary, where have you been? I was like, Gary, do you know what's happened? It's like, I haven't heard from you. Where have you been? And Christina doesn't even say hello or hi. She just takes a step back. And I'm like, Gary, have you any idea what I've been through? Like, I haven't heard from you. I was hoping to hear from you and get some guidance and support. And, you know, he said, oh, well, Rana, I, I thought, you know what, it would be best for things to calm down first. And then I thought I'd reach out and we could have a coffee together.
Politicians are such cowards. They're such cowards.
No, I would wait for things to calm down and then I would reach out and have coffee together.
Sure, sure. Yeah, okay.
And I looked at him and I became like shocked. But Gary, I needed help. I needed advice. Like, do you know what I went through? If it wasn't for one person who reached out from Montreal to prepare me what kind of shit show I was going to be put through, that they were going to use this to put my name through the mud and tear down all the work I'd done up until now. They're saying the best we can do, Rana, is get you to keep your head down and protect your reputation. And I love what they said. I know you're a fighter, Rana, and you'll be tempted to defend yourself and talk and give interviews. My friend who's PR is telling you, do not engage. Do not engage, because no matter what you say or do, they will twist it against you. That person gave me wonderful advice because they recognize the harm I could have caused myself by talking more. And I followed that advice. Gary Burrell and the EDA leaders and the EDA members did not reach out and give me any such advice. They were ready for me to just drown and die in all the shit that was being thrown at me. They were fine with that because now they were able to give their chosen one the nomination. Doesn't matter what it cost.
In hindsight, I know, you know, it was crickets from a lot of the membership, like most of the membership, but I think it caused ripples, right, Rana? Like, it almost felt a little bit of the beginning of the end of the NDP in Nova Scotia. Now, they might have had a bit of a resurgence, but they've lost a lot of trust of the grassroots members from seeing that. And then they screwed over Tammy Jackman in the last election, with a very similar playbook, almost forcing her to withdraw. They'll dispute that, I'm sure, but that's the impression Tammy gave, you know, that she was convinced by HQ that she had no other choice but to step down because the Zionist lobbyists were coming after her in a very similar way. You know, it's just really depleted trust. Like, hearing this experience and hearing the letdown and the fact you make the connection, but maybe not explicitly, like, this helped lay the groundwork for what you're experiencing now, right? It's almost like if they had only stood up for you then, could we only imagine where we'd be at now?
I would be MP. I have no doubt. I would be, because like you said, there was a ripple effect. Emma, she ran. She came in second. How many of those voters were voters that were from that riding, that area, who signed up and were so disgusted and disheartened when they did that to their chosen candidate, did not get that vote? How many? So, yes, there were repercussions, but within the membership, not the leadership, they're a tight unit.
Yes.
Because yes. Here's how I'm going to put together why they're a tight unit. Because then, much further down the road, they have to have these meetings with the EDAs, where the MLAs are there, you know, the provincial leader is there. So Gary is there, Claudia Gender, Susan LeBlanc. At that time, these were the elected officials. There's a third, I can't remember. I think it was just the two of them. And I was part of Claudia Gender's EDA. And this is also very hurtful. I was part of her EDA. So I met her regularly. I wasn't a stranger to her.
Folks who've been in a riding will know what you mean by, like, it's a family. It's a close-knit group of progressives you found in your community that you can finally, like, fight alongside with and stuff. And, yeah, you have meetings. You eat at each other's houses a lot. Yeah, it's a close group, usually.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what that EDA did to me that day during that riding's meetings? I found the courage, and I said, you know what? I'm going to go and still try to clear the air. Clear the air and maybe give them an opportunity to tell me what I did wrong that made me such a pariah in their eyes. And were they given, was a note sent out, disengage, do not talk to Rana Zaman? Like, did every single person send up, was an email sent out that you'll be fired or something will happen if you do? I was looking for something to forgive them with, or to at least understand, right? Because I can't imagine so many people would have something against me to the point they're okay with causing me that much harm. Like, they're all okay with it. I cannot fathom it. Do you understand?
I do.
People I worked hard with, I worked on their campaigns with them. Lisa Roberts was one of them. I worked on her campaigns with her. So anyway, I went there, and I won't forget, Kendall was on the mic ahead of me. God love Kendall. And he was talking, and he got his point across, and I was standing behind him, and then I got the mic. And I said, I am here today to address all of you because, and I said, I thought we were family. I believed we were family. When I joined in, you made me believe that I was welcome and we shared a cause, values, and we were in this together and that we were as a family. But I'm here to ask all of you today. And I said, each and every one of you is a leader. You are a leader of this party in a different capacity. Not a single one of you reached out to me when I was thrown under the bus. I said, in fact, Jagmeet Singh even lied and said, oh, she refused to apologize, when that's not true. I didn't refuse to apologize. And I actually sent, for using those two words, I sent that apology to the NDP. And I said, but forget all of that. Those people don't know me, but you all know me.
Yeah.
I held your hands like you are my family. You are my tribe. I said, why did I deserve this? What did I do that was so bad that I deserve to be treated like this? And if I'm controlling myself, you can hear the emotion in my eyes. That day, because the harm was so fresh, the vulgarity, the brutality, there were tears streaming down my eyes. Because I was reliving that nightmare and it was still ongoing. And I said, I just want to know. I think that the mic was shut off, but it was done. And then it's like, well, it's lunchtime now. Then the person got on the mic and said, oh, well, you know, it's time for a break. It's lunchtime. Yeah. The next their person got on the mic and said, it's lunchtime now. Didn't address it. Didn't say anything to me. So I was like, okay. I went to a table, sat down by myself. Everyone pretty much turned their backs to me during lunch and started eating and talking with each other. And that is when I realized, you are all horrible, horrible people. You are heartless, every one of you. You are self-serving, selfish people. And you are users. And only when Sean came up to me, he's the one who came up to me, and he came, I said, I had no idea this is how you've been treated. I thought that you were getting the support and the guidance that anyone would get, you know, and especially you would think your EDA is the first person to guide you and back you up. But over time, when I finally had that meeting with Gary Burrell, I said, Gary, I don't understand what happened. Didn't you support me? Like, didn't you stand up? Because I said, so-and-so said, there's no reason for them to get rid of me. It's very minor. And the NDP can, you know, withstand that. And you know what he said? He goes, well, you know, Rana, I thought they made the right decision. And that's when I knew they were all in on it. And that campaign of them trying very hard to support the other candidate and get her to win, I had upset them by winning.
Yeah, you were supposed to get the hint, right? When everyone was lining up against the chosen favorite there, you were supposed to get the hint and just lay over and die. And you didn't. Even though I have heard similar stories to this so many times from right across the country, from provincial and federal branches of the NDP, from different leaders and different riding associations. I'll say like locals kind of break down differently sometimes. I've heard really good heartwarming stories where folks have resigned en masse when they've treated their local choice this way. It breaks my heart to hear that that wasn't your experience, and that's definitely not the norm. What you experience is closer to what I, how I see the membership, as willing to allow some of this shit to happen over and over and over again because they think they don't have another choice, or they're close to power, their friends are passing the sniff tests, they haven't been abused themselves, and they are just so afraid of being politically homeless or have no faith in other avenues of politics. I don't know, but they are just willing to allow this stuff to happen. While talking about equity, while talking about justice, and all of these things, like activists, people who can come across as really woke, just people, will, in this partisan environment, act like horrible human beings. And I'm experiencing it right now in this leadership race. Like, comrades that I know should know better are really wrapped up in this, talking to each other like, in the most horrible, disrespectful ways, and vilifying some of the more radical elements that are also being demonized by headquarters. And the fact that people aren't lying, and I'm talking about Eve, right? And actually, he's going to pop into the studio any minute because I have an appointment with him at 5. But I'm talking about his campaign and the way folks are reacting to it when it's really the only one that is pushing against the kind of experience that Rana has, like where the party is hostile to folks like her. And so although I was surprised that you even had an opinion on leader, right? Like I'm kind of like, I wish you guys would just spend your energy somewhere else. But you did endorse Eve for the leadership. Why did you do that and just not tell people, like, just cut your losses and run? It's just, it's not worth it.
So the interesting thing is I don't trust the NDP, and I never will. I never will.
Fair.
Because as I wrote in my post, the real power is behind the scenes, and they're still there, every one of them. And I hold each of them accountable for the way I was treated. There's absolutely no excuse on this earth for not a single one of them to reach out to me privately, not publicly, privately as a human being, from fellow human being to fellow human being, fellow NDPer to fellow NDPer, and just say, are you okay? That's it. Just ask me, are you okay?
I know what you mean, Rana, but sometimes those private messages would make me upset too, though, because it's like, what can, it would really help if you could be publicly supportive right now, because you can see me fighting for my life out here on social media, and I know that you've experienced this too, so maybe if you could, you know, I know what you mean, but like to not even get that is something else, but those sting too, because it's like, I thought you were brave, I thought I was talking to comrades, you know?
No, they're not brave. They're not brave. They're self-serving, image-loving, power-hungry, and I'm going to say that they will throw any person under the bus if they think they can win one seat. This is what I have of the NDP leadership, okay? They have no values. They have no morals. They have no backbone. They just don't. So why have I endorsed Eves over the others? Well, guess who defended me in 2019? Eves. Who approached Jagmeet Singh and called him out in 2019 about me? Eves. Okay? And even now recently with the Y, guess who just posted about me and what's being done to me? Eves. I met Avi. Avi knows about me. I've met Heather McPherson, believe it or not. I don't know if she remembers me, but she was part of the NDP when all this shit went down the first time around. I again ask, where were all these candidates in 2019, number one, when it came to me personally, but more importantly, when it came to Palestine? Where were these people? I'll tell you where they were. running very safe campaigns, saying very safe things. And now they're all talking about Palestine and Gaza because now it's the popular thing to do and reasonably safe.
They had to be bullied into that position. It wasn't one that they took right away.
So I saw the kind of person he was years ago, 2019. I've been watching the work he's been doing. He has been standing for the most vulnerable people that have no voices, that no political people. And Eves wasn't political as far as I know at that time. He was an activist, a journalist, an author.
That's, which is very political. So you mean like partisan, right? You mean playing the game of electoral politics.
So to me, being an activist is not being political.
Okay. Well, to me, everything's political, so we'll have to talk about that some other time.
For me, is if you are wanting a career in politics and that's what you're gearing yourself towards, that's political. I never geared myself as an activist to be a political person. I'm the most non-political person. I'm a community volunteer. I just want to help people. And by the way, they lured me in by saying, well, you know, Rana, if you get not elected, you know, either provincial or federally, this will empower you to do more for those people you want to help, because you'll get funding to spend in your writing to help those people. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. You know, like I said, I was very naive.
Don't feel bad. No, I know. We've all been there. Don't feel bad at all. They've suckered so many of us in.
And now currently what I see is, and what I see when I compare him to the others, people, now this is not my word, people call him a shit disturber, this and that. And I said, you know what? It's time we need that. We need to get away from the nice and clean and neat status quo politics. We need to shake things up. We need to hear, you know, a different perspective voice. And if the NDP is truly about democracy, then they should not try to stop him from running. Let the membership decide.
Well, you've got people like Sid Ryan arguing that the membership aren't smart enough to decide for themselves, that it is a three-person vetting committee that should be best trusted with that. But Rana, I mean, we could talk all day. We need to touch base again and just commiserate a little bit, just shit talk the NDP for a bit, make ourselves feel better. But I do very much appreciate you kind of reopening these wounds. I know what's going on with you right now is already kind of reminding you, because they are connected. You talked about precedent, and that precedent has continued to be set, right, in the wrong direction, where folks aren't standing up to the Israeli lobby like they should, and good people are paying the price. And it is a warning of what actually goes on inside the NDP to pro-Palestinian activists in particular. Thank you so much for your time and for your activism in your community as well. I hope you can keep that up with your head held high.
I have a wonderful, wonderful support group this time around.
Good.
I really do. The most incredible people. You already met most of them. And I'm here today because of one of them, right? And maybe two of them, you know, like Judy, Larry, Sean. See how good people are connected? So now I have good people uplifting good people. So thank you for this opportunity to bring my voice forward where I would not have it with the regular media, with the mainstream media. So take care. Thank you.
Before we completely wrap on this, I'd like to play a little song of solidarity for you all. Rana mentioned Sean McGilvery in her interview. Here is her comrade singing outside the YMCA office, or as he would put it, their front lawn. I've linked the song and other resources, as well as that Inside the NDP playlist, in the show notes. Enjoy.
Rana, heard the Palestine call, you know Rana. She wouldn't take it at all, so she spoke up. But her haters abound, and they tried hard to take her down. Rana, yet we won an award, but then Brian and the national board, they got cold feet when the Zionists came, and they tried hard to smear her name. Let's hear it, folks! They're so afraid at the YMCA. She was betrayed by the YMCA. They tried everything to muzzle runners of on. Let's go show up on their front lawn. It's a at the YMCA. They tried everything to embarrass us all, but it's clear that they dropped the ball. Let's go! Brian, when I called on the phone, I was trying just to drive the point home. She's a hero, and I think you will find this whole thing is a waste of time, old man. So soon you'll have to retire. I said, old man, your legacy's on the wire. You could save it, but you don't have the guts. There can be no ifs, ands, or buts. Egg on the face of the YMCA. We were betrayed by the YMCA. They tried everything to muzzle Ronald Zaman. Let's go show up on their front lawn. It's a disgrace at the YMCA. You have no place at the YMCA. They tried everything to embarrass us all, but it's clear that they dropped the ball. So, Muslims, there's something you should know. I said, Muslims, when you donate your dough, you may think that the Y is good for Zakat, but I'm here to tell you it's not. Yalla, ya Habibi, let's go. I said, yalla, let's let everyone know that these cowards are taking Israel's side while we're watching a genocide. It's a charade at the YMCA. It's such a shame at the YMCA. You got nothing to say when community calls. Could it be that you dropped the ball? It's such a mess at the YMCA. It's BDS for the YMCA. Yeah. It's a place to avoid when you donate your bread. Send your money to Gaza.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.